It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 546 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have the pleasure of talking to Sam Willis, the co-creator of Ray's Comics, a horror action adventure ongoing series. They have a Kickstarter going on right now, and it's for Ray's Comics number 1 through 5. It's described this way. Time is running out as the bridge survivors attempt to rescue a missing child before he falls victim to the murderous infected. We talk about who the various characters are and who the creators are in this comic. And Sam says that people who would like horror, people who would enjoy getting lost in a story, and fans of action would really like Ray's Comics. We talk about what Ray's Comics has in store for the future as well, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show! It's great to welcome to the podcast Sam Willis, who has a Kickstarter going on right now for what is called Ray's, R-A-Z-E. Ray's Comics number 5 is the way it's identified on Kickstarter. And people always get mad at me because I don't do this soon enough for them. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, August 4 at 8:48 a.m. So how's it going, Sam?
It's going really good. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I found a description here. Okay, let me read the description because I think it'll help people understand what the book is about. It says, as an immediate crash stops the traffic on Bear Mountain Bridge, our main character Bucky and his friends find themselves in an even worse predicament. With Bucky's short-tempered childhood best friend Ian behind the wheel, things take a turn, for the worst. They crash into a car in front of him due to the frustration of the completely stopped traffic. As an awkward situation arises, the day goes from bad to worse. People should probably know that you're a fan of zombie stories. That's one of the things that make it go worse. Yes. So let's talk a little bit about, because this is your foray into comics and your passion project that you were telling me before we started to record. Talk a little bit, if you would, about how the book came to be.
Yes, so originally it was designed as a video game. So I was actually going to school for video game design. Some things kind of fell out and then kind of realized it was really difficult to make video games. So me and my best friend, who we've been writing this story for about, I would say, 15 years, we were just like, we need to tell this story in any medium. So we're like, okay, what could we do that, you know, we could still tell this story and get some really cool visuals. And then we kind of just landed on comic books. And we were always comic book fans, so it kind of just made sense to us.
Have you read The Walking Dead?
Yes, I have. I haven't read it all the way through like you have, but I've, okay. I have some issues at my house.
I was just telling you before we started recording that they're actually reprinting them in color. And they're up to 42, I think, was the most recent one. When we're talking, of course, who knows when it's coming. And of course, Mr. Kirkman had his fun with the comic shops. He ordered in through Diamond up through number 200, but the run actually ended about 196 or 198, I forget now. Mm-hmm. But he, all of a sudden, I read the book and I said, oh, that's the end. Because I had told the lady who runs the shop, I said, I think I'm running out of gas on this. I think 200 is going to be my last one. He must have known that was coming because we never got to 200, even though it was in the Diamond previews.
Yeah, no.
You're not going to do that to people, though, are you?
No. Okay.
All right. So a couple of questions I've got about the people often create characters based on people they know.
Yes.
And I, my first interview ever on this podcast was with Dave Peterson, who does Mouse Guard. And I asked him, I had these lofty ideas. These characters, is this based on King Arthur's Round Table? No, they're my friends, he goes. I said, what? He said, I know my friends and I know how they'll react, so it's easy for me to write the characters that way. Do you find that similar? Is that how your situation works?
Yeah, so some of these characters are loosely based off of real people that have been in my life. Like one of the characters that everyone kind of stands out for everybody is Ian. He's actually based off of my stepbrother, who's nothing like that in real life. He's not an a-hole. He's a lot more nice, but, you know, we used to play video games when we were kids, and he would just have this persona come out, and then once my co-creator slash writer Trey, you know, heard his persona, he's like, yo, he would make for a really good character, and we kind of just went with that.
Okay. Who is the co-creator? You mentioned his first name. Why don't you say who that is?
Yeah, so that's Trey Prim. So he is the co-creator, the writer, and now the artist for issue 5 that we're putting out, obviously, through Kickstarter.
Okay, that's good. So how did you guys get to know each other? Video gamers? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, so we actually met in 7th grade. We had the same homeroom together. And, you know, we just hung out once. We were just became really good friends right off the rip. And we, you know, we had similar interests, started playing video games together. And, you know, this comic kind of came from a what if question. And it kind of just unraveled itself over the past 15 years. And that's kind of what you see today in this series.
So what's the what if question?
The what if question was always like, what if zombies could do this? And that question kind of shows you, like, in issue 1, not to spoil anything for anybody, but our zombies aren't really the normal zombies, I would say, or not the traditional sense.
Okay.
They don't try to eat people. They're more like rage-infested monsters, and you kind of see how they just want to beat the crap out of you, pretty much.
So they're killers.
Yeah, technically.
So they don't eat, so it's just because they enjoy killing.
Yeah, so it's almost like they're rage-infested, and they're trying to pass off the infection to any person they can. So, and you're going to see as we go through these issues kind of how that operates.
So how did it start? Do we know that, or is that something that we don't need to know for the story?
So that is something we're going to slowly kind of unveil. We always like to say that we're a horror comic, but we also like to put other genres in there as well. I think mystery is a good one that we try to put in there. You are going to find out how this infection started, but when that happens, we'll just have to see.
Okay. It says on the Kickstarter page, who would like Raze? People who love everything horror. Those who are fans of action. Anyone who enjoys getting lost in a story.
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of things. I would like to believe that Raze is a story-driven comic book, which I like. I am not much for romance, and I'll tell you why. It's a 50-50 shot. Mm-hmm. They get together, they don't.
And absolutely.
So I find that kind of dull. Some people love romance and just swallow it. I'm just going like, let's see. At this point, I'd say they're not going to get together. And the people are going, oh, how do you know that? I said, well, it's pretty obvious. That's the way it's going. Sure enough, they don't get together. And I'm going like, I knew that an hour and a half ago. It was like, what's the movie when Bruce Willis was dead? And he's in a movie, and at the very beginning we see him like get knocked out or something. Two S's is the name. I forget.
Are you talking about The Sixth Sense?
Yeah, that's the one. And I was with some friends of mine who were just like, you're going to love this movie. You're going to really love it. And so I see him get knocked out, and then I see him going through the movie, but I kind of noticed that really he's only talking to this kid. And I'm sorry if anybody hasn't seen the movie, but and they get to the end and they reveal the end. And I said, and they said, weren't you surprised? I said, no, I said, I figured it out halfway through. Oh, yeah. Really? I said, well, yeah. I said, pay attention. And so for me, I just thought that's it. And see, this is what I like, a story that involves me, but isn't that easy to figure out. I like murder mysteries because I often like to know what the heck's going on.
Absolutely.
One more thing, and then I'll ask you a couple more questions. I was watching Investigation Discovery. I actually was unemployed for a short time. Mm-hmm. And I had cable, and I would sit and watch. And the thing that they do is they make the ending spill right into the next hour. And so hour after hour after hour, I was watching these murder mysteries. And I got to the place where I kind of was like, I can't take this anymore. Everybody's trying to murder everybody else. And I was good at getting depressed. And I said, that's it. I got to change channels. So that's the thing about that. I like a story that grips me, but I don't want to be forever.
No, absolutely. And it's also like, you know, for certain stories that try to go very long, you got to keep it exciting and new and fresh. And that's sometimes very difficult, you know?
Right, right. Now, this is in Peekskill, New York. Is that where this is taking place?
Yeah. So a lot like Bear Mountain Bridge, that's a real bridge. So we actually went there because we're from the Northeast. We're from Massachusetts. So we're not that far away from these locations. So we actually physically go ourselves and try to immerse ourselves even more in the comic. We go there, take photos. All the locations you're going to be seeing in the comic are actually real places that we tried to map out. So, like, hopefully one day we're hoping that, like, fans will kind of, like, create their own road trip for Rays and kind of go to all these locations.
You can do a Rays route and kind of have a tour.
Absolutely.
do people know that that's why you're up there?
We're just normal bystanders trying to take some pictures.
Mm-hmm. and nobody worries why somebody, strangers are coming there and taking pictures, huh?
Yeah, no. I mean, Bear Mountain Bridge, when we went there, it was kind of like, it was a little bit harder to take pictures because there's just really nowhere to park. So you got to kind of like walk a little bit, but it was beautiful to go there and kind of see, I don't know. It's just like, it's weird because you create this thing, but when you can like physically go to the location that you're planning to do in your story, it just kind of, I don't know, it's this really weird feeling of like, okay, I'm in the world of these characters. This is what it would look like. And it kind of gives you a little bit better insight too.
Do you mind if I ask, why did you choose that town?
So for that, it was always, okay, where did we want to start them off? And we always wanted to be New York, but we didn't want it to be another story that started in the heart of New York City. Oh. We wanted it to be kind of like in this, you know, this town that no one's ever heard of, that we could try and bring all these people together in an organic way. And it was always like, okay, issue one is on a bridge. Okay. Where's there a bridge outside New York? And then we found this really cool one. I'm like, yo, this is so scenic and this looks awesome. Let's put this in. And we kind of went from there and just started to map out everything else.
So did you had the story before you went there, or did you find a place and then built the story?
So we had the story before we went there. But we kind of, so before we even went there, we were looking up on Google Maps and trying to figure out how the routes were going to be. And credit to our artist Trey Prim, because he was on Google Maps and we're using Google Earth and realistically trying to figure out how these locations would work realistically.
Okay. So that's kind of interesting. Why New York? You said you wanted it to be in New York, but not in New York City, which, of course, Marvel, every comic is in New York City.
Yeah.
Why somewhere else in New York?
I think it's from my childhood, to be quite honest. There was a lot of TV and a lot of media where it was always New York City. And it was always like the Big Apple. And it always just like interested me, to be quite honest. And there was a lot of video games I played that was in New York City. So it was always this thing where I'm like, okay, we want to do it in New York. And how do we do that and make it feel different? And obviously not follow every storyline in New York City that you've ever seen.
Okay, well, that's good. I like something that's different from what I've seen. I you know, as my brother used to always say that if Marvel was real, the city of New York would have been rebuilt like five times.
Yes.
Because they're destroying buildings and crashing and knocking things around. And I was always like, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, no.
Let's go. It's good to, I'm sure the state of New York appreciates that.
Yeah, right.
Somebody else is interested in something else besides just New York City, which people always say should have a state unto itself because it's big enough to hold a whole nother state in there.
Oh, absolutely.
So so you figured the characters out before you went to the town, is what I hear you say.
Yep.
Okay. How did you go about constructing them? Did you have like a certain number of diverse characters you needed, a certain number of male versus female? How did you decide who the cast was?
So originally it was just us having fun, like coming up with wacky characters that we liked. And our thing was always when we created this was there was always like this video game Left 4 Dead we used to play, and it was like four people, and it was just like a shoot 'em up zombie game. And the idea came about like very early on in the creating this comic process, where it was like, this world needs to be so dangerous that we have like eight characters, which was very ambitious. And we wanted to, you know, be that thing that was very different, because I don't think anyone starts off a comic with eight people or more than four people.
Unless they're a horror comic.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was always like, we came up with all these ideas for these characters, and at the beginning, they all sounded the same. It was really hard when we were writing them because we were very young and we didn't really know how to write characters. So we would like teach ourselves, and we'd, you know, try to be better at making them feel different. And then through the years, they kind of turned into who they were. It was like a lot of like just writing funny stuff, things that were never going to be in the comic, just to see like what their personalities would be like, which is like, I think the best advice I could give is, if you're trying to figure out who these characters are, really just like put them in these weird situations and see how they react. Cause I think you'll find out who they actually are, you know? And that's kind of what you see in our series too, is, you know, there's a lot of unique situations that you're going to see these characters in, and that's going to kind of release some info of either how they think, how they act, moving forward.
How did the cast end up? How many male, how many female? Let's start with that.
So male is right now it's five, not including this little kid that we have in our group right now. His name's Mark. And then we have three female characters right now.
Okay, this is at the beginning, right?
Yeah, so you don't meet all eight of them till issue two, but issue one, you see two and two. So you see Bucky and Ian and Sarah and Victoria, and then you kind of meet Mark a little bit later in the issue.
Okay, what occupations do they have? Let's start with the males, I guess.
Yeah, so they're like high schoolers, so they're really young. So they, I wouldn't say they don't have jobs, but not a lot of them do. I think the only one that has been working is two male characters, which is Frankie and Ray. Okay. These are like, I would say, senior year of high school, so they haven't really started working yet.
Okay. Okay. Let's go to the all important diversity. What's the diversity factor? Are they like, what's how many of them are white? How many of them are other colors?
Yeah. So the way we have it mapped out right now, so Ian's Hispanic, Ricky is African American. We have about, let's see, believe four if I'm counting right. So five. Ashley, Ray, Bucky, and Frankie. They are Caucasian, but they're from, I would say, a mix of different ethnicities, as some might say, like mutt, where you have just kind of a blend of different ethnicities.
Right.
And then you have Victoria, who is more on the Middle Eastern. So we tried to instill some of those traits in into how she looks. But I would say it's pretty diverse. And there's some other characters we're going to implement as well. But we tried to be as diverse as we could. And I think when you see this story kind of move forward, you're going to see more and more characters of color and different backgrounds come into the story.
Okay, because I was always bothered by the show Friends. Mm-hmm. In the middle of New York, they're all completely white, and there's no... And now, of course, one of the creators has gotten really... She feels guilty about doing that, and now she's donating to causes and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I would always sit there and say, I felt that way too about several shows. They're all based in New York and everybody's white. And I'm going like, I don't know. I've been to New York a couple of times. Not everybody's white up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always kind of intrigued when people develop characters. How do you go about that to make it realistic?
Yeah.
You know, so it sounds like you worked on that. And so that's a good thing to hear.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like we're in America. Like you walk down the street, you're going to see all different people of all different backgrounds. So like I told my co-creators, like, yo, there needs to be actual representation. Like if this is modern day New York, like you need to see everybody, every walk of life kind of in this story, you know?
Right, right. I think that's a good way to do it. Now, the question I have is, though, if you have somebody who's a person of color, and you've talked about that you kind of struggled as to how to do how they act, did you have any trouble trying to make the diverse characters as realistic as possible?
Yeah, so I would say for this is just figuring out like where they're starting off, like what their core characteristics are, and then kind of figuring out what their background's going to be and how that background kind of implements into their main storyline. Because there are so many characters, I think we've kind of learned over this process that not everybody needs to be in every page. So you're going to see as we go through these issues, like people are going to get the limelight and certain people aren't. And it's not because we don't want to show them. It's just because the story is not demanding them to be in the limelight right now. So as we go along, everyone's going to get their chance. But the main storyline, it's almost like this straight line. And some of our characters are going to be closer to that straight line. And some characters are going to cross that straight line. So it just depends what the story demands out of these people.
Okay, because I've read the first four issues and I liked it. It's very engaging as far as what's going on, and of course, where's the worst possible place for something like this to happen? But on a bridge,
yep.
A bridge. I mean, when I was reading it, I was going like, "Oh my gosh!" And then, of course, oh man, hell breaks loose basically, and yes. I was like, "I'm like, oh my gosh! If I was ever on a bridge, the first thing I'd do would be run."
Yep.
Get off the bridge. Of course, they don't necessarily do that. You don't have a story if people run off the bridge. You gotta tell the story, and so that they don't necessarily do that.
Yes.
So one thing I wanted to ask too is, where did the book get named Rays? What does that got to do with the story and stuff?
Oh, so that is from my genius co-creator Trey Prim. So we were trying to come up with a name for this, and we were just like, I don't know. We were just kind of like on the fence with a lot of ideas because we didn't want this super elaborate name, especially because it was a zombie horror book. And I know a lot of people like it's hard because like for the zombie genre, you're either a fan or you're not. And if you're not a fan, it's really hard to kind of swing them the other way. So Trey actually found this word, Raze. And it literally means for a foundation to crumble. And like we said, we're a story-driven comic book. So that name itself is pretty much what you're going to see in this book, is how society is going to crumble, how relationships might crumble, how, you know, a bridge might crumble. It's all implemented into that one word. And that's kind of what the whole story embodies.
I don't know if we want to spoil stuff, but they do spend a significant amount of time on the bridge.
Yes.
And, of course, that's because it's a self-contained, it's like what they call on television, a bottle show.
Mm-hmm.
You have one setting, and things basically start there. But you don't spend all the time on there.
No.
So it's kind of interesting when they start to move off. I get a kick when people, because we talked about the fact that there's a car accident at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there's something, when you're involved in a car accident, there's something personal about a car. When somebody damages your car, you are not happy with that person. And
no.
The way that the people who make the accident happen respond doesn't go over well, shall we say.
Yes, correct.
And that leads into all sorts of chaos as they move along. Chaos ensues, as they like to say. So I'm just kind of curious as to how did you guys work out how many issues you were going to have and when things would move along to different settings. Did you're talking about a video game setting. Was that what you had in mind, at a certain point you got to move where the place is, or how did you do that?
Yeah, so originally when we were doing this, it was kind of like just picking these locations we wanted to go to. Like, oh, this would be a really cool location, or oh, this would be a really cool location. And then we kind of, I think as we got further and further in the process, we're kind of like, okay, we can do this location, but what story can we do either before or when we get there? And as we go along in this series, you kind of see that it's almost like it's either going to be a stopping point or it's going to push the story forward to each location we go to. I think what's important to notice is the issues we have out now, me and Trey call it the prologue, because I think it's a very easy way to get into a book. We kind of establish all the rules of what this, I guess, zombie apocalypse is, and it is very new, it is very recent, so you're going to kind of get to see the beginning motions of that.
Okay. One thing, too, I noticed right away, the covers have different backgrounds, although you've got the word rays on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that's got like a tire.
Yes.
And there's other ones. Talk about how you chose that, what the background was going to be.
Yeah, so that's actually an Easter egg to inside the book. So we always had this idea of, wouldn't it be cool if when you pick up this book and you see the cover, it's kind of like giving you a little taste of what this comic might get into without really giving away any story points. And I think the red raised text right in the center kind of draws your attention. And it was just trying to figure out with our cover artist, which shout out to Ivan Lugamer, who does all of our covers and is awesome. We kind of created this method of putting certain things in the background where it kind of gives you this notion of where we're going for the next chapter. The tires was really just, just an Easter egg to issue 3 of like, okay, pretty much, and hopefully I don't spoil any on this, but I'll keep it brief, is the car is stopped. The survivors have pretty much nowhere to go. They're stuck in a car. Not a lot of people get along. So the tires was just the notion of, okay, the car is stopped. And that's pretty much the entirety of that issue.
Okay. And the covers are color, but the inside is black and white.
Yes.
Was that a financial decision? Was that a story decision? Why did you choose to go that route?
It's a little bit of both. So I think we are independent comic creators, so color was a thing that we were willing to pay for, and we went through many renditions of issue 1, and one of the renditions was in full color, and we kind of read it, and we just weren't fans, just because we wanted you to feel like this was a horror comic, and to us, for this project, it just kind of diluted that feeling. So it was a little bit of the financial, but it was more of, okay, you know, comics started black and white. let's go in black and white. It's kind of a homage to all those old time horror movies. And it's been incredible to see, I think, what a lot of people don't notice if they haven't worked on a black and white comic is how much range you can have with it, with the gray tones and the black and the white. Like the pages we have for issue 5 that I've seen, it's the first time in a long time that I've picked up the book and have been genuinely like on edge or scared because of the tone you're getting.
Really? Wow. That's going to be interesting. Now, of course, we were talking about The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead was black and white through the first run. Now they're doing the deluxe version, which is color. I haven't been buying the color issues because I don't find them all as engaging. It's odd to say, but the black and white, I actually found more interesting.
Absolutely.
Visually. So I see that in an indie comic. I'm always interested to find out how much of it is what, gosh, we can afford color covers. But beyond that, it's a little hard. Full color printing is not that cheap. So,
oh no. So it was the smartest decision, I think, on both sides. That's why we chose it. You know, obviously we're trying to create this and we're trying to create it at a rate where I think people can, you know, pick up a few issues during the year. And that is obviously going to be dampened if you have to have all, you know, more expenses for things that I think for us didn't feel as strongly about color, you know, at least for this comic.
Well, people basically don't understand how comics are made.
Yeah, no.
So I always have to tell them, well, you know, it doesn't just magically pop out of the air. You have to get people to work on, and a writer can write a whole book in less than a week. Mm-hmm. But an artist, very likely it's going to take a month.
Yeah, or longer. I mean, it depends on the art style, the page count. It's, you know, it's a lot of work.
And people don't get that.
No, not at all.
So I always try to explain that whenever I get to this kind of a place. I always say, now, it doesn't, you know, it's not like somebody just scribbles down and draws. If you want somebody who's a good artist, they're going to have to take time to do it well.
Absolutely.
And I not everybody gets that.
No.
So how long from when you guys finished the script to where you are today? I mean, when you said you've been working on this for like 15 years.
Yes.
So when did you have the final script that you actually got number one together?
Oh, man, I'd say maybe 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe even less than that, to be quite honest. We did a lot of rewrites on issue one. I would say we went through 3 physical issues on issue one. And the first one was done. We thought it was crap, so we threw it out. The second one, we got to about page 10, and then the artist bailed on us. And then I told Trey, I'm like, hey, can you draw? And he kind of just hopped on board. And he did the first half of issue one. Noticed it was taking a little bit longer than we wanted it to. So we hired an artist to kind of finish the back half. So you kind of see, I mean, there's a certain point, at least for my eyes, I can notice, but you'll kind of notice a style shift a little bit, like I would say page 13 or 14. And that's because we just hired people on to try and wrap up this story and just get it out to the public.
No, I didn't notice that. So
that's good.
if I was more familiar with the style of the artist, probably I could, but not with this one. But so then how many artists have you had on the 5 issues?
On the 5 issues, I would say, okay, let me count this. 1, 2, I think
2 on the first.
I think, no, we actually had 3 on the first.
Oh, really?
3, yeah. Well, no, actually technically 4 on the first, because we had 2 line artists. We had an inker, which I believe that's still an artist. And then we had Trey as well, who was on it. So we had about 4 on issue 1. And then the same guy who did the back half for issue 1 did issue 2, 3, and 4. And then now Trey's just doing issue 5. So as of right now, we have 1 artist on the project.
Okay. How many? Okay, you're dividing the art chores up amongst several people. So if the same guy that did 2, 3, and 4 on half the last half of number one didn't do 5.
No, correct.
Is that schedule problems?
I think it was. I mean, he was devoting a lot of time to us, and he told me at the end of issue 4 that he wasn't going to be able to work with us anymore, just because he wanted to start his own comic book, which I totally get. It's a lot of time. It's very time consuming. So we ended up parting ways, and then we kind of went through this year of Trey practicing, because he didn't draw since issue 1. So a lot of him practicing, utilizing the skills he has, and trying to craft the best possible visuals for issue 5.
Did he have his own style, or was he trying to match the styles of others? What happened?
So originally he was trying to, I think, match the styles, but the good thing was, because we did issues 1 through 4 and he wasn't on since issue 1, he got to see what the artist was doing, and then he started to kind of create his own style this year. So when you see issue 5, you're going to see, I think, a lot of references, because he's a huge Japanese manga fan. So you're going to see a little of influence from there. And obviously a lot of influence from American comics as well. So it's kind of a blend of the two, I would say.
Because there are page previews from issue 5 on the website. And yeah, I do see the anime influence.
Yes. So there. That's pretty much going to be our style moving forward. That's what we're going with. We have Trey on it, and he's super, super passionate about drawing the books. And I wouldn't want anyone else drawing for these books, because he knows these character designs like the back of his hand.
Okay, so number 5 is on Kickstarter, and we're looking forward to being successful. The goal is $2,000, which is very reasonable. We're recording this kind of early, so saying how much you got right now is not going to really matter by the time this posts.
Yes.
the thing that as I understand what you're saying, this is actually like a prequel.
What do you mean? You mean like the prologue, like I was saying earlier?
Yeah. Is this like the before the story actually hits the ground running?
No. So this is a continuation of issue 4. So, not to spoil anybody, it's not really spoiler because we have our synopsis on Kickstarter, but where issue 4 ends, an infected is out on the loose. There's a little boy who is now missing, and it's kind of we got to find the little boy before the clock runs out, because if this infected finds the little boy, all hell will break loose. So that's kind of where we're going for issue 5.
Do you have story after issue 5, or is that going to be the wrap up of the initial story?
Nope, we got a lot more story after issue 5.
So you're going to do issue 6 then at some point?
Yes, yes, correct.
Do you know how?
End of this year, we're hoping.
Okay, do you know how many issues are in the story, or is that going to be as you develop it, as you come along, then you'll know when you get to the end, or how are you going to do that?
Yeah, so we've been developing this story for a long time. Don't really know where it's going to end right now. We've already kind of written well ahead. I think what we want to do, this has been a project we've been on for more than a decade, which is crazy to say, but we want people to feel immersed in this story. Once we feel like we're not bringing anything exciting to the table, I think that's when we're going to say, okay, I think it's time.
Okay. So you've got to, so we need to just follow along and to do it. Now, if people want to get the comics, is the Kickstarter the only way to get them, or how else do people get them?
Nope. So we are on Amazon. You can just search Raze Comics, RAZE. You should be able to find us. I think we're like the first 4 that show up. But you just got to look for the big red text. We're also on Global Comics right now. So that's like a indie digital platform. We have all 4 issues on there. So if you want to read the issues digitally, you can go to there. And obviously, if you want to get them physically, you could just go to Amazon. But that's where we're at right now. And then obviously the Kickstarter.
So when is issue 5 going to be released?
So we haven't pinned down a release date yet. we are trying to send it out as soon as I think this campaign ends. So it ends around August 4th. And we've got a pretty good chunk of issue 5 done already. We're just finalizing everything and making sure everything's going smoothly, get them ready to print, and then we'll be sending them out to all the backers that helped us.
You might aim at Halloween.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking too as well. I think a Halloween. We actually released issue 4 on Halloween, which was awesome.
Yeah, I think that I always tell the story that the Grant Morrison came up with this Klaus book. Mm-hmm. And I started to read it. It came out right about around Christmas. Mm-hmm. But the end of the initial run was in May, and I wondered how many people beside me were still buying a Christmas book in the middle of May. And now what he does, and they're smart what they're doing now, every week that's Christmas, there's a single-issue Klaus book.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's so smart. I mean, because, you know, it's just in time. They always – don't be late. It's got to be before Christmas, and they always get it out the week mm-hmm. of Christmas. So, I mean, they could do it the week before that, but you can't do it the week after, because once you go the week after, people don't care anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely.
It's like with Halloween. Although horror is something you can do the whole year long, it seems like. But
oh, absolutely.
You could do this. You could put Rays out, but my mind would say Halloween season, October, is the perfect time.
Oh, absolutely.
To do it. So are you thinking about collecting them into a trade, or are you just going to do individual issues?
So we did talk about, and we're kind of debating it, depending on how far the story goes, but we definitely want to do kind of like, you know, I don't know the official count because I got to do some research on it, but how many issues we can kind of pack together into like one book. Because I think that would be cool. Like, you know, once we have a certain amount of issues out, people can just grab one book and just start flipping through all the different chapters, which I think would be really cool. But we got to get to that point before we can do that.
We've got 28 pages, according to what I'm reading, in each issue. Yep. Usually about 5 issues is a good time to think about a trade.
That's true.
Seems like. So, well, of course, now this leads to the next question. How do people keep up with what you're doing? Is there a website, social media? How do people keep up with you?
Yeah, so right now we are on all socials. So we are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter. Am I forgetting anything? No, I think that's all. All you really have to do is search Raze Comics, R-A-Z-E, and then comics. You can pretty much find me on Twitter as well. My Twitter handle is comics_Raze, R-A-Z-E. That's one of the main ones I use is Twitter. And we also have a Twitter page for Raze Comics as well, which is just at Raze Comics. Nice and easy. And all updates, anything regarding our comic, any events we go to, any issues coming out. If you follow us on those pages, you'll be able to find out any info you're looking for.
Okay. Is there one platform you tend to put out information more than the others, or do you keep them all?
I think between Twitter and Facebook, we actually have a Facebook page too, which is just Raze Comics. Between Twitter and Facebook, I would say is the most frequently used. We post here and there for TikTok, and then obviously for Instagram, you know, is a little bit less than I would say Facebook and Twitter, just because the accessibility of it. But
okay, so that's good. See, and you keep them pretty well updated.
Yes.
Okay, because that's always a big deal. I always say that people are very understanding if they know something's coming. If there's a delay, mm-hmm. if you tell people there's a delay, they will be much more understanding than if you just drop off the planet.
No, absolutely.
Because I mentioned David Peterson before. Mm-hmm. He told me once, he made me laugh, and he said, I have to do interviews every once in a while just so people know I haven't died. Because he does everything, you know, he writes and draws and colors and the whole letters and you name it. He does everything on it, and it takes time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But now he started doing these video sessions where he's actually doing something. He shows people how he colors and how he
comes up. That's the way to do it.
It's really good. I like to watch it sometimes because it's very, not that I'll ever be an artist. My drawing is like stick figures. I, you know, some people can draw and some people can write and some people can write and draw. And I always have to ask people like that, well, what do you prefer? And they usually say, I like it all. So I stopped asking that question. But the it is a funny thing because horror is one of those things I always think, well, gosh, I don't know if we can come up with any new stuff. But you guys have kind of taken the whole zombie thing in a different direction, which I think is cool.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's, I always say vampires are done, and then a vampire book comes out that I like. And I go, well, okay. So you're taking zombies in an interesting – I'm going to be fascinated to see if you stay in this town or if you move around because, you know, Walking Dead always tended to stay like in one location if the whole group of them would move together, if they move someplace. But I'd be fascinated to see what happens to this poor town. They're in the middle of an outbreak. That's never a good place to be.
Oh, no. Well, you're going to have to keep reading these issues to find out where they go next, you know? That's the exciting thing about these issues.
Can you get the previous four issues on the Kickstarter?
Yes, you can. So you can get them digitally and you can get them physically. So if you haven't read any issues of Raze, you can kind of get them all five issues all together, which is awesome, in my opinion.
Great. And you have merch, too, as I see in your stuff.
Yes, we do.
What merchandise do you guys have for available?
So we have our catalog consists. So we came up with a variant cover. Trey Prim, my co-creator, and then Ben Willis, my little brother, / storyboard, / social promotion artist. They came up with a really cool idea for a variant cover. And this is our first ever variant cover, which is even more exciting. So we have the variant cover up there. So if you want a physical issue of the variant cover, you can get that. We have these little 64-bit zombie girl and zombie boy keychains. We have this sticker set we came up with. Just tried to have fun with it and just create some stickers that people would be interested in. And then we have the 11x17 homage to the Amazing Spider-Man poster. So that's another cool thing we're doing, and we're going to try to keep doing is, you know, kind of reinventing some of these old school posters and putting them out in the Raze universe.
The great thing about those kinds of things is they help fund what you're doing, and people may not know that, but if you buy those kinds, some people say that, well, I don't know if I should really do that. Why should I do that? Not, I just want the comic. Well, sometimes you can posters and stuff actually don't cost a whole lot to produce. But no. When you get away from after you're done with the art, the printing is not the expensive part. And so oftentimes creators will be able to make a little extra money that the help goes back into the comic.
Absolutely.
So I always try to let people know that, but not everybody does.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered a level in which people get drawn into your comics?
That is actually one level. I mean, it's not into the comics because me and Trey talked about it. We actually had that for issue one. We had a contest on Facebook, and we did a drawing where anybody, I believe anybody who bought issue one got their name put in a hat, and we pulled the name out of the hat, and we drew them as a infected in the comic. So, which was pretty cool. I think only because we're in a certain part of the story, we can't do that right now. We definitely want to come back and revisit that. But what we did do is it's literally our highest tier, and you can only there's only five, so it's limited. But it's Trey and Ben. So Trey's gonna draw you as an infected, and then Ben's gonna color it for you, and we're gonna send it out to you physically. And yeah.
Oh, cool. See, I always ask that because for the longest time I'd see that and I wouldn't be able to afford it. And finally, one came along that I could afford. It was about a zombified Moby Dick.
That's
and
awesome.
I ended up being one of the people on the ship.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I really enjoyed. There was a ship of zombies chasing after Moby
Dick. Oh, yeah.
And so I actually could afford he priced it in a way and with time that I could pay for it. And so I ended up on the ship, and I was to this day, I always think that's what comic fan doesn't want to see their own face in the comic sometimes?
Absolutely. I mean, come on.
Now, one other thing I don't know if you know who Ron Randall is. He does a book called Trekker. And he uses Kickstarter quite extensively. And he gave a, he actually at one point hired an expert to give him some advice. And I always remember this and I always tell people, just the one thing he said that was really interesting, and he, if you ever see him on Facebook and stuff, you notice it. He says the person that he hired said that you needed to advertise and be on Facebook to the level that you're uncomfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And if you're uncomfortable, keep going.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I'm not that way. You know, I don't want to get on Facebook all that much. I only promote the podcast and some other stuff that I do. But the thing that's interesting, when he said that, I thought, you know, that makes sense. Because you have to hit people when they're ready to support something like that. So he, I like to tell people, because he said it on my podcast, I think it's fair game. So I would advise you the same thing. If you feel that you're doing enough and you're comfortable with it, you might want to go a little farther.
Oh yeah, that's what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to aggressively attack these social medias, just because, you know, a lot of things kind of get swept under the rug depending on what time of day it is, how many posts there are. So it's really just, you know, you may be posting 4 to 5 times a day, but that one last person might see it at that very end of the day because they weren't on or they didn't see it or whatever the case may be. So,
well, with Twitter, if you don't see the post within like 5 to 10 seconds, it rolls over.
Oh yeah.
So this is why I don't like Twitter. I want something to last a lot. My Facebook is great because I get lots and lots of information, but I'm an older guy and they say, well, you're old enough to be on Facebook. Oh, well, thanks. But I recommend it just because, you know, there's lots and lots of people out there who are, would love to get involved. You just got to make sure you reach them when they're ready.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's my advice. So, well, I think you're doing wonderful stuff, and I think that these books are going to be fun for people to catch up with and do it, Sam. So I think that
absolutely
we'll have to talk again sometime when things are when you move past issue 5, and we'll do about issue 6, I guess, when the next thing comes. And
absolutely.
So I just say keep going and do stuff, and I wish you much success, and I hope the Kickstarter really just takes off and gives you lots of good money to be able to use on your passion project.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that, and we'll come back anytime.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.